Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and I invite you to listen into a conversation I had with Sir Robin Knox Johnson about the weather encountered at sea by racers in a Round the World Clipper race.
If you go down the South Atlantic and you're getting down towards Uruguay and Argentina, indeed, you get quite a lot of squalls, and they're nasty and they're renowned amongst seamen because they come up with very little warning and they hit you very hard. And everyone thinks, you know, oh, well, sailing down there is nice and easy. No, it isn't. It can be really, really difficult. And you've got to be totally alert. And the whole secret is, when you see a potential thing coming in, get your sails down fast, because otherwise the wind is going to blow you on your side.
Yesterday we were sailing along 24 hours out from finishing the race. Come across a few occluded fronts, as they call them in the local area, cigar fronts. We experienced between 60 to 80 knot squalls coming through. One final test after 5,000 miles, an incident with not being able to release our tack line in time, which resulted in, can I put this nicely, the explosion of our code 2 kite. Good effort from everybody to get it down. What can I say about the weather? Lightning pretty much throughout the entire evening, fork lightning all throughout the sky for 12 hours or so.
What you got to realize is those crews are amateurs. They've had our 4 weeks training, and by this time they've sailed about 5,000 miles, so they're not exactly amateurs. But nevertheless, for them, exploring the different areas of the ocean and the different weather systems you can get is still something they've got to learn about. And coming down that coast can be difficult. And people think, you know, it's a piece of cake. No, it isn't. The sea never lets you off. You've got to be alert the whole time. We always used to say, you know, the whole thing about a seaman is he's alert. And you've got to be alert, because those systems come through and they can knock the boat on its side. You know, suddenly people who've never been out of their drawing room, finding their whole world's turned 90 degrees. And yet they come out of it and they survive it and they come out of it. And when I went and met them in Uruguay in Punta del Este, when they finished, you could see the pride they got, because they'd been through something really difficult and they come out of it. And I thought, bless you, you're now learning and you've every reason to be proud of yourselves.
To see the video of that boat in the thunderstorm, go to sailsporttalk.com and click on Round the World Clipper Race Uruguay.
All right, Tuesday at 9:40, you hear Chris Cross, and you know it's time for our SailsportTalk.com weekly segment. Co-hosting, as always, from that website is Karen Lyle. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great. You know, I just returned from sailing in Arizona and speaking at the Arizona Sailing Club, where I met our guest for today.
Yeah, I always like to sail from Tucson to Phoenix and that great ocean down there.
There's a lake. It's called Lake Pleasant.
Well, I know they have Lake Havasu. We'll talk about that in a second, but you're right. Let's bring in our guests. We're quite happy to have Gregory Romano, the Heritage Program Lead at the National Weather Service, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Gregory, thanks for coming on. What does the National Weather Service Heritage do, sir?
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick and Karen. It's a pleasure to join you this morning. The Heritage Program for the National Weather Service is really focused on gathering all the great stories about the National Weather Service's history. You know, our history goes back more than 150 years. We celebrated our 150th anniversary on February 9th, 2 years ago in 2020. Because we were founded on February 9th, 1870. So we've developed a great website that has a lot of those stories about all the events and changes in society that sort of precipitated change in the National Weather Service over the years.
You know, Gregory, I am always fascinated by the weather, of course, being a sailor, which I know you are as well. Do you have maybe a story you could share with us from your heritage project that might be of interest.
Well, certainly, Karen. You know, one of the things that few people realize is that the founding of the weather surface itself is based in large part on some massive numbers of losses on the Great Lake in 1869. According to the Milwaukee Sentinel, they issued a story in December of 1869. There were 1,914 vessels lost on the Great Lakes that year. 209
wow.
lives lost, okay? And a gentleman by the name of Increase Allen Lapham, he was a scientist from Wisconsin, had long been studying the weather, studying the ability to forecast. Can we forecast what weather storms will show up in the Great Lakes? And his concern was primarily related to the Great Lakes. And there was a lot of activity coming up prior to this time that a lot of energy started with the Smithsonian. I mean, this goes all the way back to colonial times of collecting weather observations, collecting forecasts, and trying to come up with methods to say, how can we forecast the weather to save lives and to benefit commerce? Increase Lapham wrote a memorial to Congress through his congressman, Halbert Payne of Wisconsin. And Payne, who had studied weather and science under a gentleman by the name of Elias Loomis, basically totally got what Lapham was saying, pulled together some legislation in December. January, it was created into a continuing resolution, and it was signed by President Ulysses Grant on February 9th, 1870, establishing what was then called the Division of Telegrams and Reports for the Benefit of Commerce within the U.S. Army Signal Service. And that was the foundations of the Weather Service, but it had a large part to do with being able to forecast weather on the Great Lakes and on the Atlantic seaboard. Of course, in 1870, the Pacific Ocean was still, you know, way out in the territories, and then it was, and then, of course, the role of the Weather Service, Weather Bureau at that time, was expanded to include the Gulf Coast and the Pacific waters as well, in addition to all sorts of land forecasting as the years went by. A couple of great stories we also feature on the website is we have one about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Of course, everybody remembers the song, but our weather forecast office in Marquette, Michigan, several years ago, put together a great summary of the storm, the meteorology behind it, what happened that caused this wreck. And it's a pretty great weather story in addition to being a sad story about the loss of lives on the Great Lakes. And then another one that we're about to feature, our weather forecast office in the Boston area, you know, we just recognized the 30th anniversary of the perfect storm, which again, we've seen the movie and the book by Sebastian Younger, where we saw the loss of the Andrea Gale off the Grand Banks, off of Canada due to that storm. And again, they look at the meteorology behind it, the history, what happened that does this. And we will be featuring this on the Heritage, the weather.gov/heritage website. See, I got a plug in there for it in the next few weeks.
You know, the Edmund Fitzgerald, a lot of people still don't know what happened. I mean, we know it was the worst storm ever and it had a list, but they didn't put out any distress signals. Was that just a stubborn captain?
You know, I don't really know what happened on board. And I think those are some of those questions that are still unanswered. We know the boat broke up. There was probably some big waves that happened, and whether he was not able to issue a distress call or just didn't have time, that's a question for somebody else.
You know, Gregory, there when I was back before I joined the Los Angeles Yacht Club, there was a film that was taken by one of the members of the Los Angeles Yacht Club that has. That shows a storm that happened off just in San Pedro Bay, and basically shows all of the 70 gale force winds and shows all of these boats capsizing as they were coming in by the lighthouse. And it was really attributed, a lot of the account was attributed to the fact that the weather forecast was for a pleasant day, but it was actually the storm coming along. And I know that your wife is a former AP member, AP journalist, Judy. And, you know, what is it, what's the relationship between the Weather Service and the news as far as getting that word out there?
You hit the nail on the head. The media, the news media is a huge, huge partner in getting the word out from the National Weather Service. You know, when you think of all the television meteorologists, the other meteorologists that are out there, they are all excellent, excellent scientists. They use their own data. They use a lot of data from the National Weather Service and from NOAA. All the satellites that NOAA flies provide a lot of data, which feeds numerical models. You know, you hear often about the Euro model or things like that associated with hurricanes. And they've all come to know, and they're all partners in communicating this information. And when you think about that information in, you know, off of San Pedro and LA Harbor and having once sailed a fireball in Hurricane Gulch over off of LA Harbor, I can appreciate the irony there of LA is so typically has all this benign weather, and sometimes all it takes is one little small thunderstorm to provide a microburst, and all of a sudden you have winds that really weren't forecast. But again, to your key question, Karen, that is an important part of what we do, is to make sure that we're talking every day with the people who are getting the word out there, whether they're getting it straight from the Weather Service. A big part of our role right now is communicating with emergency managers to make sure they have the information they need to minimize impacts from upcoming weather. But the news media is a huge, huge partner in making sure that people stay safe.
And how spoiled are we now with our phones? And it's almost like we get upset if it says it's not going to rain by 3 o'clock and then it does.
Or even just be off by 2 degrees, right? I mean, Karen talked about racing in Lake Pleasant. We also, here in Arizona, we race in Tempe Town Lake, which is right in the middle of town. And the last several months, it has been mostly drifting conditions there. And you just, I use the Weather Service website. There's a tool that you can locally look at what the winds are going to be for the day, and it can, and if it's off by 2 miles per hour when you're on or 2 knots when you're in Tempe Town Lake, that can be the difference between having a nice sail or just drifting around and bumping into each other.
That's true. Well, I was just out sailing yesterday, and the prediction was for 5 to 10 knots, but it was 18. And in a bigger boat, that's not a problem, but a little boat, that can really make a difference. What have you been also sailing out on Lake Pleasant? That's where I was last Wednesday.
I've been by there. I haven't specifically gone sailing there yet. As you may remember, Karen, I was announced as a new member of the Arizona Yacht Club last week. I have been out of the sailboat racing scene for almost 40 years. Most of my sailing recently has been rentals, either in San Diego or in Marina Del Rey. And I'm eager in getting back into a laser, 14-foot dinghy, for those that know it well. And I haven't sailed a laser in 40 years, and I'm hoping it's like riding a bike. That said, I'm really curious to see what sailing in 18 knots of wind in a laser will do to my knees.
Last question for you. How much, if at all, do you still use weather balloons?
Weather balloons are a daily staple. It is amazing how important they are. The data that we get from weather balloons feed those numerical models I talked about earlier. They are incredibly important data sources that go in into those numerical models, and you see that output every day. When you pull up your morning news or evening news and you see you see a forecast and it's based on a model, a lot of that information is coming from weather balloons.
Very interesting. We've been speaking with Gregory Romano, Heritage Program Lead of the National Weather Service, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Gregory, thanks for your time and your insights.
Thanks so much for having me.
And
thank you, Gregory.
Karen, just real quick, what's Lake Pleasant like?
Well, it has these beautiful towering cactuses around the outside of it. It's a near a dam area. It's pretty. There's quite a bit of area to sail, and I went sailing on a J-70, which is a J-boat, sailboat, and we had maybe, you know, somewhere around 5 to 8 knots of wind. It was really lovely. I actually enjoyed it. I think sailing on a lake is marvelous, and it's actually the first time I've done that.
Karen Lyle with Sails. Well, you've done Lake Tahoe, right?
No, I haven't.
What?
No. I know.
Once again. What? All right. Well,
the Delta, all the coast, the oceans, you know.
Okay.
Like the inland, that's new for me.
I can't believe that I've sailed on Lake Tahoe and you haven't.
Oh, I love it. Rick, you have something on me.
I know. Finally. All right. I got Elton John's xylophone, too. How about that? She hung up. She literally hung up. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back.